Coming up, we get a surprise episode today. Unexpected because I interviewed Mykal Brown Jr. from the Louisville Cardinals, potential top 10 pick in the NBA draft. So we thought, hey, let's drop another one this week, especially after the Thunder went up 3-2 in the Western Conference Finals. So I talk about that to start the show before we talk some draft with Mykal Brown Jr. That's all coming up right now on the Kevin O'Connor Show. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Just watched the Thunder beat the Spurs 127-114 in Game 5 of the Western Conference Finals. I got five thoughts from Game 5, starting with number one. This is the Jared McCain game 2.0. He's already had one already in the series. Should we just start calling this the Jared McCain series? He had 18 of his 20 points in the second half, helped OKC build a 20-point lead in that third quarter. And it's not like he just got hot from three. He did hit three-pointers in the game, but he had two pull-ups from mid-range, two shots at the rim, and just made timely drives to the basket, getting some flow into that offense after what felt like a very stagnant game four, because that was the story. No A.J. Mitchell, no Jalen Williams. Where is the creation going to come from aside from SGA? McCain stepped up big time, and you got to give credit to Mark Daigneault as well for putting McCain into the starting lineup. He starts J-Dub in game one, starts him in game two. J-Dub doesn't finish that game with the hamstring injury. Understandably so, starts A.J. Mitchell in game three. He doesn't finish that one with the calf issue, hasn't played since. Game four, Cason Wallace gets the start. It didn't work quite as well. Cason Wallace is more like a Caruso type, more so than a creator. So then he makes the change, Wallace to the bench in game five, McCain into the starting lineup, and it worked beautifully. And also just benched Isaiah Joe for the game as well. So McCain, a big game again, big series for him. My God, Maury, I love you, but you didn't sell high on Jared McCain. The price is going up with every game we're watching here. Number two, the Spurs feel like they're running out of energy. Maybe it's just a one game thing, you know, but they got cooked by McCain. They got cooked by Caruso. You can't get cooked by those guys and expect to win. And I think with the San Antonio Spurs, there's an element of, you obviously you're trying to stop other guys and that's how those players are getting opportunities. But at the same time, I just felt like in general, there wasn't the point of attack energy from the Spurs that we've seen in past games in this series. And I thought that was exemplified with SGA getting where he wanted with more ease against Castle, against Vassell. Castle was over aggressive at times. And sometimes that can be a symptom of fatigue, just trying to do too much, not able to control your body as often. And Vassell was not as effective one-on-one either. And he also struggled on offense. It was his worst game of the series. He was 2-for-9 on the offensive end of the floor. So maybe that played into it as well. And the crazy thing is with SGA though, is he had 32 points in the game, but he still wasn't great. And he had the interview after the game with Zora Stevenson, who does a great job with NBC Sports. And she asked him, last question was, when are you going to think you had a good game? And SGA chuckled and he just said, when I have a good game. And he hasn't yet. I mean, he's averaging 26 points in the series. He's shooting only 39% from the field. He's not able to get into the paint anytime Wimby's on the floor, as I talked about in game four. That was unchanged for the most part in game five. I thought he did a bit better job of getting into the paint, but not looking to score. He hasn't had a good game though. He's had by his standards, right? You know what I mean? By his standards, he hasn't. Will he have that good game to close out? I think he's definitely capable of just catching fire from the perimeter. And that might be what has to happen because Wemby is still inside, still a deterrent. That said, number three thought here, Victor Wembanyama has to be better. In this game, Wemby looked like a 7'7" shooting guard, and that just can't be the case. He was 4-for-15 from the floor, only 6 rebounds. He entered halftime with only 1 board. He had 24 in game one, 17 in game two. We know what this alien is capable of on the boards, but he has had 8, 4, and 6 since then. I think Wemby's tired. I think he's exhausted, And this is in part on the fact that what did San Antonio do all year long? They played him under 30 minutes per game. That was the argument against Wemby for MVP. Oh, he load managed. He didn't play enough. That was the big argument against him that a lot of people, understandably so, used. And that's why he finished third in MVP voting. But we're seeing that, I think, as this series and these playoffs are going. Straight up, Isaiah Hartenstein just overmatched Wemby physically. Just out-toughed him, out-physicaled him. Jalen Williams, Jay Will, I thought did very well on him as well. Hartenstein was the primary defender, but there was a play in that first half where Jay Will stepped out on Wemby around the elbow area and just gave a hard contest on a jumper that he took. But that's the thing. Wemby was settling in so many moments of this game, not able to get to the paint with his sloppier ball handling right now, not able to get there in part because the guards on the Spurs aren't able to get him those opportunities there. But also OKC, we talk about how Wemby builds a wall around the rim. OKC collectively is doing that against Victor Wembanyama. And, you know, credit to Chet as well, by the way. Part of that is him flying around with his help defense as well, crashing the boards. I thought he was very aggressive tonight. And this collective effort from the Oklahoma City Thunder, I think, is doing a really good job with containment on Wemby. But at the end of the day, you can't look like a 7'7" shooting guard. Wemby needs to be better in game six. Obviously, Captain Obvious here, for the Spurs to have any shot at all of having a 3-2 comeback. Number four, this is probably the biggest one. The Spurs are playing a mistake-prone style. They're a mistake-prone team, as you'd expect a young team to be, but Wemby was sloppy on a lot of his drives, just out of control. Champagne, he had the play where he passed the ball to Wemby, not even when Wemby wasn't even looking for it. You got to be more aware, more locked in. Castle, opening play of the game for the Spurs, sloppy turnover. He only had three in the game, so it's not like he had 11 again, but it just felt like out of control at times, some inaccurate passes that hurt the flow of the offense. And Dylan Harper, who has been sensational, got pickpocketed by Cason Wallace twice in the backcourt and then by Alex Caruso when he was driving inside the three-point line as well. The guards need to be better, and never mind De'Aaron Fox, who hasn't been good at all, period. I know he's dealing with the injury right now. You can see him grimacing, but 4-15 in the game, not looking like the De'Aaron Fox that we know, but you got to be the vet. You have to adapt, and I just don't feel like he has shown the ability to do that in that series. And playing hurt, there's a lot of guys playing hurt, and De'Aaron Fox is just so severely limited with his injury right now. It's debilitating the Spurs offense. Number five, this is probably going to lead a lot of the stories on the ESPN and everything in the morning, all the take shows. Number five, the officiating, it was a mess. Undeniably, 51 fouls were called in the game. 70 free throws were taken, 38 for OKC, 32 for the Spurs. This was by far the least enjoyable game of the series to watch. I had my least fun watching this game because of all the fouling and all the whistles and everything. I don't think it determined the game, to be clear. And that late third quarter sequence when the Spurs were starting to make a little bit of a run is going to get talked about a lot. There's a goaltending call that wasn't called on the Thunder. I didn't mind it personally. I thought it was a bang-bang play. Cornette had a putback. It might have been in the cylinder when he touched the ball. Cason Wallace skyrocketed up, blocked the shot. It was a bang-bang play in the moment. I'm not going to overreact to the instant replay when it might have been basket interference by Cornette anyway. I didn't think that one was a big deal. But after that, oh boy, this one was bad. The ball was very clearly out on the Thunder. The refs huddled up about it. They still got the play wrong. Mitch Johnson on the sideline for the Spurs calls for a challenge. He's waving his fingers, and they don't give it to him. And he's heated. He's losing it, stomping his feet, pissed off, and they give him a tech. They give him a tech because they missed a call. And he wanted to challenge it, and then they didn't give him the challenge. Just absurd. Just such a whiff by the officiating in that play. But again, I don't think the officials determine this game. I think it was the Jared McCain game. I think it was the Wemby can't look like a 7'7" guard game. Those are the determining factors in why Oklahoma City is now up 3-2. in the Western Conference Finals with a chance to go back-to-back against the New York Knicks. The New York Knicks, they must like seeing these two teams beat each other up. They must be rooting hard for a Game 7 on Saturday night. Boy, I'm excited. I can't wait to see who the Knicks are going to face. I'm going to have some Knicks people on my podcast in Thursday. I'm going to be in New York City and going to have some Knicks friends on the show. Very excited to look ahead to the finals. We're going to probably talk about Spurs versus Knicks, Thunder versus Knicks. What are we watching for if those are either of the matchups? And we're all obviously going to celebrate as well. All right, up next, my interview with Louisville guard Mykel Brown Jr. Aesthetically, he is one of my favorite prospects in the class. He's 6'4", super explosive, creator, shifty, crafty. He can, like, I talked to him during this interview about a left-handed dunk he had, a poster on Trayvon Brazil. He's got plenty of right-handed dunks too. He's an ambidextrous player, just has a lot of skill. He's very talented as a passer, and in my draft guide, I have a comp to Manu Ginobili, and I've gotten – the comps always get criticism. People always criticize the comps, and they never come with another comp. Please come with a comp better than Manu Ginobili. There's probably one better, but the reason why I have that Manu comp in there is because the flair that Manu used to play with, I loved Manu in the pick and roll with that kind of overhand, left-handed kind of scoop pass he would make to the roller. Mykel Brown does that, and it just reminds me of Manu. There's that flair and that energy that's contagious that he plays with, and I love that about Mykel Brown. Defensive playmaking, too, as we get into during the conversation. I'm just a big fan of the guy, and it wasn't a good year for him at Louisville. He was hurt. He struggled. He sat out of games. He had a back injury. This back injury is concerning to NBA teams because it dates back to when he was an overtime elite. He missed time when he was playing in the OTE due to a back injury. He says he's cleared. That's how we open this conversation. He's cleared to participate in pre-draft workouts now. And as Chad Ford said, if this isn't some chronic back thing, when I asked Chad on the podcast a few weeks ago, who's the potential steal? And Chad said, if there's not a chronic back injury for Mykel Brown, I think he should be the fifth pick and he could be the steal of the draft. I agree with that. I agree with that. So we'll see what happens with Mykel Brown. But here's my interview with the man himself from the Louisville Cardinals, potential top 10 pick in the 2026 NBA draft, Mykel Brown Jr. All right, now joining me to discuss this journey to the NBA, it's Mykel Brown. How you doing, Mykel?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
So let's start off here. I heard some good news. You got clearance from your back injury. You're able to start workouts now?
Yes. Yes, I did. Finally, I've been saying it. You know, I've been feeling amazing. I haven't felt this way since the beginning, like preseason, since last year. So, yeah, they cleared me. And just to, you know, kind of get that out the way is amazing now. So now I'm just focused on the next thing. So.
And you're working out for the Utah Jazz, I think, this week. That's your first one?
I am. I leave for them tomorrow. That's my first one. And I'm going to be working out with several other NBA teams, you know, once me and my team, you know, get that stuff figured out. But, yeah, they're the first one on the board.
Now, at the NBA Draft Combine in Chicago, you mentioned how you never really felt like your full version of yourself this past year in college. Can you walk me through what was happening physically during the year? And at what point did you realize, like, this just isn't going to be the freshman year that I had hoped for?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't expect it to happen like that. Obviously, I didn't want it to happen like that because I wanted to play a full season. Like, you know, the national championship was on my mind. So, but yeah, at the beginning of the season, it happened. Memphis game really took a toll on me, and I just didn't feel the same. And so I was just trying to get treatment. And came back, you know, had a good stint of games. I would say that I probably played my best. And then, you know, I just re-aggravated it again. So, you know, dealing with that, it was all a learning lesson. In all honesty, I learned a lot from the situation and having to deal with, you know, adversity. You know, you're going to face it at some point in your life. So to be able to deal with it this past year and just learn a lot from it. I mean, I learned a lot, you know, going through that process and having to do all the treatment and doing everything it takes to try to get back on the court. Unfortunately, like I said, the season didn't go as planned in my book, but I learned a lot from it. So, yeah.
I mean, that said, there were still moments where you're like, oh, this is the Mychal Brown that we hope to see. I mean, I think about your left-handed drive, left foot, left-handed dunk when you basically killed Trayvon Brazil.
Yeah.
I mean, that was one of the dunks of the year. And that was off your left foot with power. With your left hand, you have that ambidextrous power finishing and finesse finishing as the well. What do you remember from that play specifically? What were you seeing on that drive to the basket?
It's one of our patented plays for our guards. You know, they got it going. I'm just trying to really just, you know, give me an open lane, you know, coming off that down screen. Usually everybody kind of cuts through the right side to try to give me a whole side on one side. So, I just seen a hole and I seen an opportunity to just go up and dunk the ball. So, because I had Isaac Manili in my corner, and you know, Isaac Manili's greatly known as a great shooter. So you don't want to help off of him. So that helped a lot. And I just saw the rim. And, you know, I thought I had an angle. I had a really good angle and I took off. So
now let's say you're describing your own scouting report to somebody who has literally never seen you play. They don't know a thing about you. How would you describe your own game to that person?
Yeah. Just a very creative, a leader, you know, make plays for others, get guys open shots, really just a creator, for himself and also for other people. And then just somebody that's just going to compete on the defensive end, game in and game out, guard well. And I think that, you know, that's the best way to sum it up, man. I'm just a big creator, for myself. I know how to create for myself and I know how to create for others. So.
I mean, you mentioned that creativity. That's the thing I feel like when people talk about you, they talk a lot about the scoring ability. But I think that creativity that you have to your game with look-offs and taking unpredictable angles. Like, I feel like if you're defending Mychal Brown, you don't really know what he's going to do. There's like a sense of improvisation with your game. Who'd you grow up studying to kind of have this as part of your style? Or is this just like a supernatural thing for you since you were young?
Yeah, no, it's definitely something that, you know, I had to build over time. You know, I was God given, you know, speed, you know, be able to get up the court, you know, get it from my family genetics. But, you know, really just learning the game. I studied a lot of players like, you know, Steve Nash, Chris Paul, Rajon Rondo, the guards that, you know, have a different, like when you really break it down, people be like, wow, I never thought of it that way. You know, those are the type of guards that I really study. And I studied today's game as well. You know, Jalen Brunson, you see where he's doing. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Tyrese Maxey, Stephen Curry, Trae Young, Dame Lillard. I study all the guards. I mean, I don't really have anybody specific that, you know, I really, you know, look at. I try to take pieces of everybody's game and try to take, like, put it into mine. So I think that's where really the creativity comes from.
You're listed at 190 now. That's what you measured at the draft combine. What's the goal weight for you to kind of like best withstand the rigors of a long NBA season?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I want to try to get to 195 at least. Playing wise, just being in between 190 and 195. And, you know, as the years go on, you're going to gain weight, you know, get older, you know, testosterone and stuff like that. Like, you're going to gain weight. So I really don't really worry about that as much, because I know at the end of the day, it's all going to take care of itself. If I do what I'm supposed to do, eating right off the court, eating the right foods off the court, and then just taking care of my body, I know my body's going to take care of itself. So
now you mentioned some guards that you study. Who do you think your best role kind of compares to in the NBA? How do you see yourself? Who do you see yourself playing like?
I don't even want to compare myself to anybody. I think I'm my own player. But like I said, I definitely just taken, you know, other people's, you know, strengths of their game and try to just put it into mine and just be my own player. I know what I can do. I know what I can bring. And I know, like I said, I'm very like adaptive. I'm very adaptive when it comes to certain situations and the right fit and whatever you need me to do to come in and make an impact off the rip, come in and be the guy right away. Man, I'm ready. I'm ready to do it all. So,
how much have you watched the playoffs this year?
Every night.
What has stuck out to you watching these playoffs? Any trends?
Physicality.
Okay.
Physicality, for sure. Physicality. And I've been preparing that, you know, in my workouts, not just going by myself, but I'm having people like, you know, guard me, be physical. I think that's really the thing for me that I is like eye opening for me now, like to see how physical the playoff basketball is. And just getting prepared for that. I mean, that's the goal right there, is to get in the playoffs, to make the finals and win an NBA championship. So just really just adapting to the physicality. Yeah. Definitely have something I've been working on.
I think that's spot on. I mean, I feel like every player in the playoffs, it's like actually getting minutes. They got that dog in them. You know what I mean? Like there's a sense mm-hmm. of toughness and grit mm-hmm. and intensity and force that they play with. And those are the teams that are winning and advancing. And it's been like that, you know, every year. I think finesse matters, skill matters and all that, but there needs to be a sense of toughness. With your game, is there a time or a moment where you look back on and you're like, okay, I've had those qualities. This is a moment where I showed that toughness and battled through adversity in the moment in a game, whether high school or college?
Yeah. It's a good question. I mean, definitely I'd probably say going back to AAU, I had a really, really bad ankle sprain. Somebody stepped on my foot, or I stepped on somebody else's foot. Somebody fell on my foot. So, I had to deal with that the rest of the dang tournament. It was my last AAU tournament ever. 17U, Rock Hill championships, Adidas championships. I got hurt in the first round, and, just pushing through that and gritting your teeth and fighting through adversity. I actually had one of my, you know, probably like most memorable plays. I hit a game winner in the second round to move on and advance on my ankle. So right then and there, and I got the stop after that. I got a steal to end the game. So I think that would be the moment where I'm like, you know, gritting your teeth, like get a stop, finish the game. Like we were fighting back. We were down the whole game, fought back, and we pulled it out. So definitely I would say that was probably the biggest moment where like, gut-wrenching, like just being a dog, just fighting through stuff. So
I mean, you mentioned your defense, and I think like when I compare you against the other guards, and this isn't to like dismiss any other player or anything like that, but I think with you, you're like event creation, the stuff you do as an off-ball defender with deflections and steals, flying around, using your speed and athleticism on defense. I think with some of the other guys, there's questions when I look at them at like effort level or awareness or their body type. With you, I don't think there's any questions with the approach, the mindset, the awareness, the IQ. So I'm curious with you, like what does push you to stay locked in on that end of the floor? Is this something you had to learn? Was there ever a time in your life where maybe you weren't playing defense early when you were younger and you learned how to do it? Or was this just always a thing for you?
It was just always the thing for me. It's just a sense of pride that, you know, the household that I come from. I mean, you know, my father's on me all the time about it. I mean, you know, going back to when I was a kid in middle school, like I was playing pickup with a grown man. Like I was the one getting picked on. Like, nah, you need to grow up and guard. So I learned that from a young age. Like, it's just a sense of pride that I have when it comes to the defensive end. And the biggest thing for me is bringing that every single night. Every single night, just mentality wise on point of attack defense, you know, getting up in the ball. I've actually been watching a lot of like really good defenders and how they defend in the playoffs. Like you got Cason Wallace, Lou Dort, Stephon Castle, Carter Bryant. And then I also go back, you know, watch a lot of Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday is really like crafty defensively when it comes to guarding. So, but yeah, it's just a sense of pride that just been instilled in me since I started playing this game. So
you mentioned where you come from, your family and your background. Is it a basketball family? Is that how you picked up the game at a younger age?
Definitely a basketball family. My mom and my sister are volleyball, but they played basketball before. So definitely a basketball family. Yeah.
So at a young age, you picked up a ball. When did like the vision of becoming an NBA player first kind of spark in you?
Probably when I started taking it serious. I started taking basketball serious at around third grade. So, well, I was like 7, 8 years old. Wow. So I definitely, yeah, it's been instilled in me. Like the moment I was born, the ball was put in my hands because my dad was in college still hooping. So just kind of got, you know, just my love came from it like early on at an early age. And, yeah, third grade was when I was like, nah, I want to take this serious. And then I started playing AAU in fourth grade. So definitely been in it for a long, long time.
If you could download a specific move from another player and just have it installed in you overnight, what would that move be?
There's so many. I'll probably have to say the way Shea uses his body and like to get that separation and that creation using his body, I'll probably say that little bump off that he usually gives, going left. I think I'll just have it down pat. Like, I think that was one thing that I'll probably take.
What are you working on now? Like, what's the skills you're working on at this time?
Everything. Finishing around the rim, you know, you see Wemby down there, like, just getting adapted to, like, using creative finishes to finish around the bigs. Obviously, like I said, physicality, just using my body more, being more physical when it comes to that on the offensive end. Working on defensive concepts as well. I'm working on everything. There's really not anything specific that I'm hitting. I think everything that I do is specific and it needs to be detailed and, you know, sharpened. So I really don't have anything specific.
Are you going to install that Isaiah Hartenstein, like the 20 feet in the air push
up? Made four in a row. That was insane. It was insane.
I mean, he puts that up to the ceiling, right?
Like, he's mastered it. It's like a second nature to him.
I know.
For sure. It's normal.
It's so crazy how we hit those. I mean, I do think, to your point with like that, with the adding some skills like that, last year in college, small sample, so like not a big deal. You shot 2 of 12 on floaters, according to Synergy Sports. Very small sample size. If you shot another 12, you might have done better. But is that something that you maybe haven't worked on a lot in the past? Maybe because you're able to get to the rim, you haven't needed to have a floater? I'm just curious about your story behind 2 of 12 in a small sample.
I mean, based on how our system was played at Louisville, we're a big rim shot and three-point shot. So at the time, I wasn't really working on my float game as much just because how our offense was based. I was so focused on, all right, we got to get this, and this. This is how we have to operate within the offense. So that was definitely more team built. But now, I mean, I've always had touch. Like, I've always had a floater, you know, going back into my AAU and, you know, young AAU career days. Like, I've always had a floater. Just at the moment, I kind of went away from it because that's the shots that we really wasn't looking for at Louisville. So I'll definitely say that. But it's gotten better. Like, I got my touch back now. I'm working on it every single day. Something that I'm sharpening every single day because I got to be able to have that going into the league and playing against these bigger dudes.
You mentioned the touch aspect. You shot 33% on catch and shoot three-pointers last year as well. Was the back injury a factor in some of the streakiness as a shooter?
You could say. Because I used to jump higher than I was when I was shooting catch and shoot. But also just probably, like, I'm not even going to lie to you. Like, I was just trying to be so perfect at the time. Because I wasn't getting a lot of catch. I don't think I got a lot of catch and shoot.
76. So you had 84 off the dribble. Exactly.
I had more off the dribble. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't really getting as much catch and shoots because I think, you know, people watching me at USA, I got a lot of catch and shoots and they seen the percentages when mm-hmm. It was at USA. So, but I just really think just me wanting to master it, and I kind of got in my own head when it comes to missing a shot. I've gotten much better at it now. So I think that played a part, and also the back, just because I kind of elevate more. So my shot was kind of flat. So now I'm actually emphasizing shooting the ball up in the air more. And it's a deeper range, so.
Do you know what you shot on catch and shoot threes for the U19s at USA?
50, probably.
69.6%.
I was not missing too many open shots at USA.
No, you weren't. 16 of 23. Obviously, small sample, but yeah, you were lights out last summer.
I wasn't missing that much at all.
That's for sure. You weren't at all. what do scouts get wrong about you? What are the weaknesses you hear about in meetings or you read online? What do people get wrong about Mykal Brown?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, you know, the health factor is a point. Like, was he really injured? Was he not? I mean, I was. I just was. It's just something that just came across that I didn't expect to happen, like I said before. And like I said, now I'm feeling better. But I really do think the defensive end, people kind of target me going, like, or I'm very inconsistent when it comes to it. And honestly, like, going back to watch the film, there was plenty of plays where I could have did better. I could have been in the gap. I could have been in the places where I was supposed to be and I wasn't. So I definitely will take accountability when it comes to that. But I think, you know, like I've never like I guard the ball. I'm not a guy that you're gonna go at. Like I'm not one of those dudes that you pick on. Like I'll hold my ground when it comes to one-on-one defense and you somebody trying to just go at me. Like I take pride in that. It's just like I said before. It's a sense of pride. It's just where I come from. Like if you're the one getting picked on, you ain't supposed to be on the court anyways. You're supposed to be on the bench. So just that mentality of just wanting to stop the other guy and then also going down on the offensive end and killing him. I mean, it's always been my mentality. So
I feel like with you, you're somebody who studies the game. Obviously, you're just entering your NBA career, but do you have like a coach's mind at all? Like, do you like watching film? Is that something way down the line?
I love watching film. I love correcting myself because I want to be a perfectionist at the end of the day. You know, it's the same way when I'm on the court trying to perfect one move or I'm trying to perfect like just the thought of like defensive concepts or like where you're supposed to be, just mastering that stuff. Same thing off the court, mastering film, seeing what I need to correct and going back on the court to perfect that. You know, it's all one. So definitely just having that perfectionist mentality for sure.
Some random questions for you to bring us to a close here. What's your biggest motivator?
It's my biggest motivator, my parents, my mom and my dad for sure. Because they went a lot. They went through a lot for me to get to this point. Sacrificed a lot to get to this point. For me and my siblings. So yeah, I'll say them too.
What's your biggest pet peeve?
Ooh, my biggest pet peeve? Bad basketball? the game of basketball not being played the right way, if you would say that. When it comes to basketball stuff.
I won't ask you for any specific examples from this year's
playoffs. No, don't do that. I'll say bad basketball, but if you had to say something like off the court, probably like just not being scheduled.
Oh, yeah.
Like just not being, I'm a big schedule guy. I'm very like routine oriented.
I mean, you were perfectly on time for this. I appreciate that, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What's some music that you like that would surprise some people?
I'm a big Michael Jackson fan. I think everybody kind of knows that, but I also love Jay-Z and Lil Wayne. I'm definitely like an old rap guy.
I heard some people call you Michael Jackson.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Michael Jackson's like, I mean, he was like my idol growing up, you know, when I was a kid. You know, go outside, do my homework, go outside, play, and I'm coming back inside. I had my little Kindle Fire, and I'm watching Michael Jackson videos. I was actually just getting treatment just now, and I was watching Michael Jackson videos before I even came up on this on this call. So, I mean, MJ's the king of music.
Are you like dancing alone in your room?
I do. Yeah. I do, but on my downtime, when nobody sees, I cannot dance.
You're not doing on TikTok like Jared
McCann?
No, I'm not. Millions and millions of followers.
Yeah, he does. Nah, that's not me though. I'll dance in my alone time by myself. Nobody sees. So,
what do you do besides basketball? Besides dancing, like do you watch TV? Fishing, anything?
Fishing, gaming. I actually was just on the lake on Sunday for about 3 hours. Caught me a little two bluegills. So, I enjoy fishing. I mean, fishing is very peaceful. Obviously, it's hot down in Florida. It's hot, so kind of. You know, struggling, but other than that, it's just very peaceful just to sit on the water and, you know, not touch your phone, you know, just enjoy life. I mean, I think that takes you, it goes a long way.
You mentioned gaming. What games are you playing?
2K, Fortnite, Siege, Rainbow Six Siege. I'm a big 2K guy though. I play a lot of 2K.
If you could have any superpower, what would it be?
Teleportation. So I could be everywhere. I could make my sister's game and then I could turn around and make my brother's game who's all across the country.
That'd be pretty sweet.
Teleportation.
Right? Can you imagine?
That would be amazing.
It's so cool.
Yeah. It's so cool. So cool.
What do you love about basketball?
I mean, I just love the game. I love the game itself. Like I said, I love when it's played the right way. And I just enjoy and I just have fun just putting the ball in the hoop. I mean, it's just something that I've been doing for so long to where it's like, I'm just a hooper. I just love to hoop. Like, that's all I want to do. I don't want to do nothing else. Like, I'm on the court when it comes to everything. Because it kind of takes my mind off of everything else. So,
Mikel, rooting for you, man. Thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Big thank you to Mikel Brown Jr. for joining me on today's show. Thank you to Emmy for producing us. We'll be back again later this week. I got some more pods planning. Going to be doing some interviews in New York City. Very excited about that. We got the NBA Finals right around the corner, baby. The NBA Draft right after that. And then free agency. The rumor mill is about to heat up so hard right now. I am fired up. This is the best time of the year. Please be sure to give us a 5-star rating if you have not done so on Spotify and Apple. We are nearing 1,000 ratings on Spotify. Can you help us get there before the NBA Finals? That would be so awesome. Thank you so much. Have a good day. Talk to you later this week.